On page Kuf Lamed Tes, corresponding to page 277 in the top numbers. It is just below halfway in the middle of the page. The last word in the line is Vihine, which is where we are starting. There's a dot Chayas Ruchni is dot Vihine. And in the English, it is known to those who adapt as the first paragraph on the left hand side. We are analyzing statement. I thought it was a statement from Sivas Aravosh, the last will and testimony of the Baal Shem Tov, and we went into what that meant last week. But it was actually he's analyzing statements from it, because we went on a tangent, and the tangent, as it turns out, also happens to be from another place in Sivas Aravosh. And the idea being that the topic sentence is that Kol HaKayas Ki Ilu Ovid Avodah Zarah. Anybody who gets angry as though they worshipped an idol, because things are not going the way they want to. Then the altar went on a tangent of basically the first two chapters of Tanya in chapter 7 of Shor Yochid Vamuna, and chapter 7 of Shor Yochid Vamuna, that talks about L'Olam Hashem Dvar of Nishto B'Shamayim, that Hashem has to be always constantly involved and continually creating the world, which is understand right. Why is it? If a person understands that, so it's going to come back to it that he's not going to get angry because Hashem is creating the world the way it's supposed to be created, and there's no way to be angry. So he says, Nodali Yadei Chayim. It is known to those who are familiar with the esoteric wisdom, ki dvar havaya nikr b'shem shchina b'lashon rizal. You have something that says that it says la'olam dvar Hashem nitzav b'shamayim is the pasuk. Forever Hashem, your word stands in heaven. So what's your word? So there's a whole bunch of synonyms for the dvar Hashem, the word of Hashem. So it says, first of all, it's called Shechina in the Zohar. And it's also called Ema Tata and Machanis in the Zohar. It's also called the Little Mother and the Matron. And he says, and then we'll talk about why. So there's all, and he's going to say it's also corresponds to Adonai, and it also, of course, he doesn't say that here, but it also corresponds to Malchus. They're all the same thing, doing the same function. But why all the names is because what angle are we looking at what this aspect of Hashem is doing? So understood that why does he call it Dvar Hashem? Because it says in the Pasuk, it's a Pasuk in Tilam, is because just as there is a process in looking at ourselves that I want something, and specifically let's say I want to say something. So that pristine desire must be therefore, thereafter, enclosed in intellect, emotionalized, thought about, put into letters, and tempered, and metered out, and then finally uttered. Okay, so there's this whole process that's going on. So the Kabbalists put that into terms of spheres of Keser, Chachma, Bina, Das, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and finally Malchus. So and that's what they basically assigned GPS coordinates for the process that's going on. If you're talking about Ema Tata and Matronus, so Ema Tata means the little mother. Okay, how do mothers get to be mothers? They give birth. Okay, so Malchus, the whole purpose of Malchus is for whatever's going to come after Malchus. It supplies the vitality. That's the Dvar Havaya, which is, he says, which is enclosed in everything at every instance. Or he's going to say now the Shechina, which is mislabish in everything at all times. So the fact that there are different ways of looking at it. And Adonai, which is one of the seven names, simply means boss. And what do bosses do? They boss.
Direct.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what this is doing. It's bossing. Same thing with Malchus. What does a king do? A king kings. A king reigns. As he says right here. So why then is this Dvar Havaya? So therefore, we're using the analogy of speech to understand the process of how, from divine pristine desire, you can come up with three-dimensional things that recognize their own existence. Because why do we speak? Is it to communicate our desires to something which is not us? So Hashem, quote, so to speak, speaks in order to convey his desires into things that recognize themselves as not Hashem. There's the point of comparability there. So then he says, so why is it called Shechina? Lefi shesheichen umislabish b'nevroim lahachiyosin. Because it dwells and encloses itself into the creatures to enliven them. So this attribute that we're calling, referring to this creative aspect, specifically as Shechina, and you'll notice, except for Adonai, all of these expressions are female. Adonai happens to be male.
Okay.
Adonim is masculine. But the other one, Shechina, is feminine. Matronis is feminine, and Ematata is feminine, and Malchus is feminine. So they're all feminine because that's the feminine aspect. What does feminine do? Feminine receives from the masculine and gives to the next generation. That's the whole reason why it's feminine. So here it's called, this aspect is called Shechina, because the Rebbe spent 40 years explaining the word Shechina. That the whole purpose of the creation of the world is lasted to, that it should be Iker Shechina betachtainim. That's every single, you know, that's the concurrent theme in everything. And every time the Rebbe opened his mouth and said anything, that he wanted to have the Iker Shechina down here below.
Right.
And in the very first Maamar, what does it mean, Iker, the main Shechina? We're talking not just some little Malchus of Atzilus. We're talking about Hashem's total and complete pristine level of, you were pristine three times already, level of Malchus even before the creation process even started, but even that, even such a high level of Malchus, like even Malchus before the first Tzimtzum, its function is to cause the godliness to be enclosed within everything. So that's why it's called Shechina, because it is readily and apparent. Everybody knows they're alive. We don't know what it is that's making us alive, how we are alive, but everybody knows that they are alive. How is it that we know that we are alive? It's because there's some bit of revelation of divinity within us that at least allows us to feel that there's energy within us, that we are alive. And it's also, he says, Ubalashin Hamukubalim Nikr B'Shem Malchus. And in the spheres, this level, which is called Shechina, is called Malchus, because of a pasuk, Al Devar Melech Shiltain, because the word of the king rules. So if you're going to call it Dvar Avaya, so what kind of word is it? So is it going to call it a, you know, you could say it's Hashem telling jokes when he said Breshis Bara? Hey, did you hear this one, Breshis Bara? Funny thing happened to me on the way to the creation. These are the words of a king. And the words of a king, what happens when a king says? People do.
It's done.
So Hashem said, let there be light. And what happened? There was light. These are all expressions of Malchus, specifically of this rulership, of this Adnus. Ki ha-melech manhig malchusu b'diboroi. Because a king directs his kingdom by his speech. He doesn't have to go and fight wars. He's got people for that. He has to say off with his head. The guy gets his head cut off. He doesn't have to cut it off himself. Mm-mm. So what happens now is the godliness now can diffuse within every single creature in order to provide that creature with the right amount of godliness that it needs. Now, normally, the word shochein, dwell, you have this feeling also of like a superficialness, I suppose. And he's going to talk about this later. Okay, as opposed to enclosed. Enclosed means like right in it.
Okay.
Shochein means like it lives there, is found there. Shechina is a neighborhood. Uh-huh. So the neighborhood's like this whole big place. It's all around. Okay, so there are two things going on. And he talked about this back in chapter 48. Pardon?
Like Mamali and Sovig.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he talked about this in 48, chapter 48. And he's going to talk about it more, except now there's going to be other things coming up, and that's on the next page. And also, those people are familiar with this. These people, since they're familiar with it, they don't need to know. They don't need to be talking about this because they're familiar with it. But yeah, everybody else.
Well, the rest of us, yeah.
And he's the Kabbalist then?
Yes. When he says Li'idei Echem, means those who are familiar with the Kabbalistic lore, Kabbalistic wisdom. Umadai is thus, it's no, you should know. Kiyesh Bechinus and Madregus Malchus de Tzilus or Bechinus Malchus de Bria. So now Malchus, this is why the Rebbe, this is where the Rebbe got this whole idea of talking about in his very first mimer that there's different levels of Shekhinah.
Yeah.
Different levels, because there's different levels of Malchus on every level.
Sure, of course.
And we have several Malchuses too within us.
Right.
You know, so I mean you have Malchus, which the final, because Malchus you could translate as the final result.
Okay.
So if you want to think, so then your malchus for that is the thought that you're thinking.
Right.
If you want to say something, so the final result is
the speech.
The thing that you're saying. And if you want to do something,
it's the action.
The action that's going to happen is the final result.
Ah.
And hence it is the expression, Nois Chilasen B'Saifan. That the beginning is wedged in the end.
Right.
Why is it that anybody does anything? Is because they wanted to.
Yeah.
It's an expression, the initial step is for the final result. That's why it says, for example, Hashem did not create the world for an Atzilus. Because to Atzilus, for Hashem, that's what it's called a Yerida.
Is the first expression then Adonai?
Where?
Anywhere there's a beginning to have an expression, so that eventually it comes.
No, the final expression is Adonai.
That's fine. The final expression, okay.
Adonai is the same as Malchus, it's just a fancier term.
Yeah, but, okay. There's a quality difference, though, isn't there?
Between Malchus and Adonai?
Yeah.
Lord and King, maybe. It would be correct to say that a king is engaged in Adonis, too, you know, so.
Yeah.
They're both
kings. Okay, all right. There's a hair split there, but I don't know. I don't know what it is.
There are no words in Hebrew that are absolutely mean the same thing.
There's a hair split there, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So. Yeah. So every part suf, every time you have anything, there's going to be a malchus.
Sure.
The malchuses are going to be basically performing the same function, just like chesed performs the same function. Chesed means every give. Level. And if you're talking about chesed of Atzilus, so you're giving an infinite way. And if you're talking about chesed of Bria, so it's in a way which recognizes Metzius, until finally chesed comes down here and somebody gives somebody a quarter. Okay, so that's all. It's all chesed. Somebody's giving something to somebody. So with malchus, it's all the same, all as well. It's how am I taking what I'm having till now and relating it to something outside of my realm.
Okay.
Because the purpose of Malchus of Atzilus is to make a Bria, and the purpose of Malchus of Bria is to make a Yitzir, and the purpose of Malchus of Atzilus is to make this physical world.
Atzilus, right.
That's what it's here for. But they are the same, yet they're different. Pirish Malchus of Atzilus Ubuchinus Dvaravaya. So we need to say, how is it that they're working different? They're going to call them all the same thing as Malchus, but they're obviously not the same, because a king down here is very little in common with, say, Malchus of Atzilus.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Because this is a Melech Basar Vadam, he has limitations. He's only going to be in the world a maximum 120 years.
Yeah.
His effect that he has on the world is only those people who have accepted him as king. So he's got great limitations, okay? And Hashem's Malchus is not sitting on a chair someplace up in the sky.
Right.
That's the God we don't believe in. When somebody says, I don't believe in God, we agree with them. I don't believe in that either.
Indeed.
Okay, so from Malchus of Atzilus, that's the Dvar Avaya. So now, since it's the Dvar Avaya, so something's coming out, something's being expressed and appreciating this expression of Malchus immediately. Like, for example, Mahava Neshamas HaGedolos. You have, when you say that there's a Neshama of Atzilus, what does a Neshama of Atzilus mean? A Neshama already recognizes its own entity. So in Atzilus, it's Ihu v'chayehu chad, Ihu v'garmehu chad, Hashem and the life, and Hashem and all the effects, even the limitations, are all recognized as being one thing, totally completely with Hashem. So how do you have a neshama of Atzilus? It's because the neshamas of Atzilus are the product of Malchus already.
Okay.
And that's how Shemuel has Atzilus. K'may neshamas Adam Arishain. Like, for example, you see by Adam. With Adam, it was clear. It says Adam Shenemer Bavi Ipach Va'apav Nishmas Chayim. Then it was Adam. It says it goes way back to chapter 2 in Tanya, where he quotes the idea, the statement from the Zohar, the man denafich metayfre nafich, that when you're blowing into something, you have to take a big deep breath right. first, and then you're blowing it out your with essence. Force.
Right.
And that was what the neshama of Adam was.
Right.
Adam, I'm not that I'm going to start measuring one for one, but I'm thinking that Adam had the highest neshama of any person whoever was alive on this world, because everybody's neshama was comes included in right. his neshama.
Right, right, sure.
And listen, the man lived 930 years, he did one thing wrong. You know, that's a pretty good average. You know, I was happened to be a very big thing, but and it was only when he was just an hour old,
a couple hours old.
Yeah,
right?
You know, he was a young un.
Give him a break, you know. Like, so, well,
so like Adam Arishan, that his neshama was in a direct expression, not just of Dvar Havaya,
yeah.
an external expression of.
Yeah.
Of the creative aspect of Hashem, which is how everything in the world came into existence. But this was from Pnimius of Malchus and had to go through external. Because it's the same thing, the same air that you use when you're talking is the same air that you're using when you're blowing up a balloon.
Right.
It has to go through the same pipes to get right. out of your mouth.
Right.
The difference between the air which you're using to speak is that's just from, like we'd say, the top of the lungs, you might say.
Mm.
The blowing up of the balloon, or in this case, the blowing the soul into Adam, that's from the bottom of the lungs, from the very innermost aspect yeah. of it. And he says also, it doesn't stop at Adam. Okay, Adam, we have it clear. But Adam was the only one who got his soul blown into him like that.
Right.
Everybody else, it just kind of like gets thrown in, you might say. Like you see the patriarchs, all the prophets, that what's prophecy? Prophecy, we said way back in chapter 4, also happens to be an expression of Dvar Havaya.
Yeah.
The fact that it's in the 24 books of the Bible is an indication that it's the Ritzayin of a Chachmasa Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu that goes through the creation process and so that somebody could write it down.
Right.
So that's also Dvar Havaya, because let's say all of those books, at least we know the first 17 books were said. So that means that the godliness was going through someone's body and out someone's mouth. Specifically, we see like with by Moshe with the book of Dvarim, that it says Hashem midaberes b'teich groinai, that Moshe was just moving his mouth.
Right.
He was Hashem's ventriloquist dummy, and the sound was coming out. So he was this conduit for it. And it's the same thing also with all of them. We see by Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah didn't want to say his prophecy because he was at least 10 years old. And second of all, his prophecy is saying doom and gloom. Yeah. And he knows no one's going to want to listen to him. So he decides he's not going to say anything. It says he felt like his teeth were on fire until he absolutely said it. And then his teeth were on fire and it felt like there was a volcano erupting on his insides saying, you got to talk, buddy. You can't not talk. Okay? That's what is that? That's all expression of the Dvar Havaya that's going through him. Why did it go through Yirmiyah and not you? Say Baruch Hashem. You know, because of his neshama.
Where did we learn that Yirmiyah was 10 years old?
Chapter 1.
It's in the, they figured it out, it's in the commentaries, everybody seems to know.
Seriously?
Yes.
Before his bar mitzvah?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
He was the one that was, the first parak is about how he's doing prophecy when he's so young.
Yes.
Very, very young.
I didn't know he was that
young. I don't know really about Torah that died.
Listen, you know.
I had no idea.
Anybody else would have just said, no, I'm not doing this, God, no.
Well, yeah, Shmuel, too. Well, we know how
Shmuel was 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was just hello.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yo.
But then it's the whole changeover of the Kohanim, the structure of Eli.
Yeah. So listen, if you have a neshama of Atzilus, it doesn't really matter.
I guess it doesn't matter, does it really?
Yeah. And if you would have been 120, what are most 120-year-old people doing?
Watching Super Bowl.
They're watching their navels. They're not doing a whole lot. You've got this 120-year-old prophet. The fact that has the robustness to be able to say such a thing. There weren't any prophets, I don't think there were that. But he's a laborer through HaKodesh, in the practice. Shohayu Markava, that they, the Avos, and to a lesser degree, the prophets were Markava la Hashem Mamish, Bateli Mamish, B'metzias Alav. That they did not have any of their own existence. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are called the Markava because they willingly gave up their free choice. The other prophets had no free choice. They weren't asked, do you want your free choice? Do you want to follow me? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were kind of like asked. And they said, no, we're giving up our free choice. These other prophets, they were just vehicles for conveying it. Did you ask your car, do you want to go here today? Mm. No.
No.
You're not taking them home. Sometime in the future, you're going to have a smart car.
Then we may have to.
I want to go this. I want to go this way. I want to go 80 miles an hour, and the car's going to go.
No,
I don't think so.
No. Get out my snips.
Yeah.
When they get older, they do.
So. Kamayim Rizal Shkina Medaber Sotech Grinus. It says Shal Moshe. We just said. And so too it is with all the prophets. And also, he says, even to a lesser degree, anybody who had Ruach HaKadosh. Ruach HaKadosh, I don't know if we ever talked about these different levels of prophecy. David HaMelech was a Navi. Yeah. But you have Ruach HaKadosh. It's after the known prophets. Hmm. The last known prophet was Ezra, maybe?
No,
Malachi.
Malachi,
wasn't it?
Yeah, okay.
I think.
Daniel, was he a Navi? Daniel?
Yeah. Okay, so you're still talking 2,500 years ago. But it says the Hayam Yaim, that all of the Mefarshei HaTorah that we have wrote their commentaries with known Ruach HaKodesh up until and including Meshach and Taz, which is the late 1600s. Which meant, what did that mean? Yes. That they took a pen and they put it on a piece of paper, and they could have gone to sleep at that point.
And they said, go, God.
And they just started writing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, look at the Baal HaTorim, for example.
Yeah.
The Baal HaTorim wrote his entire commentary on Chumash one night.
One night?
He had nothing to do one night. He wrote his entire commentary with all those things where he talks about, you have this word appears three times in Tanakh, and this word appears five times in Tanakh.
One night?
One night. Just sat down and wrote it, okay. Without the aid of a computer index.
Computer index, yes.
He didn't have Google.
Jeez. Okay? Yes, he did.
He had the real Google.
He had the real thing.
Right, and then you have somebody like the Shulchan Aruch. It says, I used to hear this when I was first becoming from. So there was a shul, it was a Baal HaBatish shul, and there were people from other yeshiva philosophies, and they were the opinion that, well, Rashi says this, and I say this, or if the Beis Yosef could say that, based on the way he looks at the various different things, well, I look at it and I'm thinking, why shouldn't it be like this? Well, a very big difference is because you have Ruach HaKodesh and he was a Chacham, and you're an idiot. But besides that, why is it that you can't go back to the primary sources of the oral tradition of the Torah Shebaal Peh and formulate a halacha differently than the Beis Yosef, than the Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah. I never heard of a yeshiva that says you could.
These were individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. They had their own philosophies.
Oh, yes.
Individuals.
Okay.
The
so the we weren't going to go into this. This is a conversation for Fabrangans.
Right.
Okay. So, but why is it that the Beis Yosef says right at the beginning? It says in the beginning of what's the book? Magid Mesharim. What's the name? There's a sefer that the Magid Mesharim that the Beis Yosef wrote. Mm-hmm. is a commentary, for the most part, on Chumash. There's a couple of things on some of the later books of Navi, of Nach.
Yeah.
So Magen Mesharim, stuff an angel told him. Okay? And he was informed that, it doesn't even say, it says over there, but it doesn't say what he did. It says that he had the schus to die al Kiddush Hashem. But he mucked things up, he did something wrong. It doesn't say what he did wrong. So instead of dying al Kiddush Hashem, so Hashem said, you know what, we'll let you write the Shulchan Aruch. That'll be the consolation prize.
Oh, boy.
So, I don't recommend martyrdom at home, and don't try writing a Shulchan Aruch. I mean, you know, so.
If you're going to do it, do it both same time.
Yeah. You probably will do it. Yeah. So, and that's why the nobody argues on the Shulchan Aruch. They just explain it.
Yeah, sure.
Because he was known, there it is, let's, you know, it was a known thing that Hashem was basically directing his quill. That when he wrote down the Psak Din is like this, and that was after he wrote his major commentary on the tour, where there he gives the timing, the rationale, why it is you should say a halacha is like such and such. So there you see the depth of that's why we call him the Beis Yosef, is in that commentary, which is why the tour is so long, is because of the Beis Yosef, not because of the tour. The tour is written very concisely.
You only had one night.
Yeah. You know, not, no.
That was.
That's just a spirit commentary on Chumash.
That's right.
I don't know how long the Arbiturim took.
Yeah.
Wow. And as he says, but Ruach HaKadosh is on a lower level than Nevuah. A Navi said, Hashem told me such. A person with Ruach HaKadosh just wrote it down.
Right.
That's why you could have somebody now looking at the Beis Yosef or Rashi and saying, I don't agree with it.
Have a good time.
Okay. So, but then what happened after that? So what happened after 1648, the 1650s? So then it says, then you had Chachamim. So you'll look at the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
It says, what it says is up until the Shach and Taz, they wrote their commentary with known Ruach HaKadosh.
No.
Everybody knew
it, right,
that they had Ruach HaKadosh. The Alter Rebbe, okay, so some people didn't know that he had Ruach HaKadosh. you could touch it that way. You know, or, you know, they wanted to comment on the ga'oiness of the Alter Rebbe, you know, so when he was 13 years old, they gave him smicha because he knew probably more than most of the people that were giving him smicha at that point.
Right.
Okay, but if you look, the style of learning in Lubavitch Shekhela is a Liba de Hilchasa, it's called. You start with a piece of Gemara, and then you learn the Rambam and the Rosh and the Rif, and some of maybe the other Acharonim, and then hit the Tur with the Beis Yosef and the Bach, and then hit the Shulchan Aruch with the Shach and Taz, and some of the other nicer Kelim over there, and wind up and end up with the Alter Rebbe. And you can see in one short page, the Alter Rebbe very succinctly puts everything down, lays everything out, says which opinions you should follow, which opinions you shouldn't follow. In a time of duress, you could do this one, but really, you should really go like that one. If it's not time of a duress, it's totally and completely laid out. Okay? So, and there's so much information, and it's written in such a very clear, concise. Manner. Okay, there's in the introduction of the Chumash by the Rashbam, the son-in-law of Rashi. So he writes that he tried to write a commentary on Chumash and Gemara in the style of his father-in-law, but couldn't, because he could not figure out how to stick so many words in one word like Rashi could do. Okay, that's why you look, for example, the commentary Rashi on Arba Psachim in the Gemara is a little tiny thing at the top of the page, and the Rashbam takes up most of the page. Okay, he goes into all these different things, and he's so long-winded, and like, you know, I've learned Rashbam with people, and a lot of people just think they lose patience. It's like, if you're learning Rashi for a long time, there's just a couple of chapters that have Rashbam in them. There's Arba Psachim, and there's from the third parak of Baba Basra until the end of the parak, which is why Baba Basra is so long on page-wise, is because most of it's Rashbam, not Rashi. If Rashi would have done it, it probably would have been two-thirds the size. So the so people lose patience with it because it's not so succinct.
It's not concise.
Okay, and how is it that Rashi got that way? A little help from above doesn't help.
Doesn't hurt.
And the Rizal writes in Shara Nevuah that what is all of that that's going on between the various different levels of prophecy, because Adam and Avraham and Moshe and Yeshaya and Yechezkel and Malachi all saw the same thing but described it differently because of the level of prophecy that they were on. And bottom line though, they're all neshamas of Atzilus.
Right.
And they're all an expression, they're getting their chayas from Malchus of Atzilus. So if it's all from Malchus of Atzilus, how come there's only not one level of prophets? Because there's not one level of Malchus of Atzilus. You have a parts of Malchus. You have Chachma of Malchus, and you have Bina of Malchus, and Das of Malchus, and Malchus of Malchus. Okay, and if you want to say, wait a minute, how many Malchus of Malchus do you have already? Well, in Malchus of Malchus, you have Chesed of Malchus, and Vor of Malchus, and Malchus. So ad infinitum.
Just only infinite.
So you're going to have infinite possibilities of levels of Nevuah and Ruach HaKadosh. And it's all an expression of Atzilus. The thing is with Atzilus, Atzilus is called Olam Achdus. Somebody who has into that groove of Nevuah and Ruach HaKadosh, they're batel b'metzias all love. They understand it's not me. I can imagine the tour after he got through that night that he wrote this Pirush on Chumash, kind of looked at it and went, wow, that's pretty flipped out. How did I do that? Umalchus de Bria, who dvar havayam chayom havay neshamas amalachim shebo'ilam abria. And Malchus of Bria, well, that's the dvar havayah, since we said that Malchus and dvar havayah are the same thing, which enliven and bring into existence the neshamas of the angels, the higher level of angels, which are in Bria, so he says in Bria. She'ein ma'alos and kamaylos etzilus. It's still pretty good. A neshama bria, yeah, I'd take it. Because what's bria? Bria is Efsharius HaMetzius. The entities that exist in bria know that they exist, but they see how they're being enlivened by the godliness.
Yeah.
So they're still totally, completely bottled to it, other than the fact that they say, well, they can use the expression, I am bottle.
Right.
Whereas Malchus of Atzilus can't make such a statement. Because it can't say I.
Right.
Because all there is the bittul. All there is the elokus.
Right.
But here in Bria, since it's Efsharius HaMetzius, the possibility of something existing, so it recognizes its own existence, but recognizes its own existence as nothing more than the way Hashem is creating it. And then he says v'chulu, and the v'chulu means for Yitzira, which he doesn't talk about because who cares about angels, low angels, Trump change. We get to the point. Malchus de Siu Hudvar Vaya Machayo Mahavis Olamazebachlalo at Seifa Ha'afer Vahamayim Ashurmitachas Laharts. And Malchus of Atzilus, the Dvar Havaya, which we call Malchus of Asiya, enlivens every aspect and brings into existence every aspect of this world from one end to the other, even dirt and water. That's actually, again, going back to No, it's chilosim b'seifim. The end is implanted in the beginning.
Right.
Dirt is the lowest form of creation. That's it. There is nothing in the spectrum of creation from beginning to end lower than dirt.
Right.
Everything that's in this physical world eventually
comes to minerals.
Goes back and becomes dirt. That's its lowest common point.
Right.
Is dirt.
Yeah.
But it just so happens that dirt is what allows plants to grow.
It's the greatest quality. Right.
We'll beat starving.
It has the Dvar Havaya in it, which causes things to grow. We've talked about this before. Tremendous energy that there is in dirt. Tremendous spirituality. It is for sure the Dvar Havaya that's in the dirt that's causing things to grow.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay? And even people need to be on the dirt. People who are suspended above the dirt, or suspended off the ground for any length of time, they kind of lose themselves. I mean, it takes a while. Like, for example, if you're stuck in a tin can flying across the Pacific, when you get to the other end of the Pacific, 18 or 20 hours later, so it takes a reacclimation back to dirt. You kind of like lose yourself in the grounding. Same thing, all the people who spend like weeks out in space,
yeah,
okay, their bones have to basically realign themselves and they have to come back and become human beings again because it's the dirt that's doing it. People are going to say it's gravity, but you know, there's gravity up in an airplane also, by the way. So
artificial gravity by rotating.
Yeah, planes are still within gravity, so there's no. I haven't seen things floating in planes yet. They do have floater planes. They call them non-grid, where people learn how to like deal with no gravity.
The
but
descent.
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. But you know, but the average, I would say that you know, trans-Pacific flights, people are sitting down and things aren't floating by.
No,
you know, so it's not the gravity. It's the fact that they're disconnected from their muck or from their dirt. And then he continues. We are going to stop actually at the parenthesis on top of 278. It's about 10 lines down. We'll pick it up next week. Elisha Ba'artzis HaUmois on 278 to be continued.